Good morning, welcome to Tuesday morning's Kildare Today. Owen Beattie and Ciara Noble with you until 11 o'clock this morning. And coming up on the programme, a new online sexual support hub will be available for third level students and staff when the new academic year begins. We'll hear from Dr. Charlotte McIver, Active Consent Programme co-lead at NUI Galway. As you heard on the news there, a BBC investigation alleges thousands of ex-racehorses were being sent to abattoirs, many of which were previously trained in Ireland. We'll discuss that. A Kildare senator calls for a special Shannon committee to examine family leave. Milltown GAA granted planning permission for a new development at the club. We'll speak to its chairman. Kildare Tidy Towns are urging people to get involved in their local communities ahead of the annual competition. We mark the anniversary of the first moon landing. It happened on this day in 1969. Motions and issues from the Selbridge, Leixlip and Athy Municipal District Meeting. And we'll also have some great music as well. That's all to come between now and 11.
Kildare's KFM Morning Newspaper Review.
And of course, keep your messages coming in to us to the usual sources, 0833 97 97 97. That's on the text and the WhatsApp. You can also email studio at kfmradio.com, or after the newspaper review, you can call us on 045 901 490. And in studio two this morning is Ciara Noble. Good morning, Ciara.
Good morning.
So we're going to be taking a look at the Irish Examiner, the Irish Times, the Independent and the Journal very shortly, but the weather again, Ciara, absolutely gorgeous. It's all anybody seems to be talking about, and it's
all
no
you're
surprise.
Talking about,
I
anyway.
Know. I'm absolutely delighted with the weather.
I know. Well, look, we should be. It's summer. We should have sun.
And we covered it on the programme yesterday, didn't we? That Irish Water now are asking people to conserve water, and that's been extended now into Kildare and the surrounding areas as well. So,
I mean, we did have a lot of rain the past few months, so, you know, people are scratching their head a bit as to why we need to conserve the water now. But look, we're in Ireland, it is what it is.
Yep. Yeah, it's only been a week of the hot weather.
Has it even been a week yet?
Not even, no.
Yeah.
Probably not, no, only a couple of days.
It was last kind of Tuesday, Wednesday it started, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Right, let's have a look then at the Irish Independent, Ciara. We'll start with you. Close contacts will no longer be offered PCR tests if community testing demand rises to 20,000 a day, is it?
Yeah, well, exceeds 20,000.
Ciara, your microphone there, I don't know what the story is. It sounds... No, it doesn't. You might jump into the news booth if you can, because that microphone seems to be gone a little bit funny on you. If we go to the Irish Examiner, extra helpline added to help with unacceptable backlog of digital COVID cert issues. The government is moving this morning to deal with major backlogs in its digital COVID certificate. That helpline, an extra helpline on the DCC, will be in place from this morning, so it will be able to take a far higher number of calls, senior government sources have said. As a result, they say the person ringing will not get the call message failed. The number to contact for the new DCC helpline is 1800 807 008. So I'll give that out to you again, because a couple of people rang in yesterday looking for that number. So the new number for the new helpline, 1800 807 008, if you have any questions in relation to your digital COVID certs. Let's go to Ciara in the news booth now. Can you hear me, Ciara?
Oh, I can. I'm out of breath.
Yeah, I saw you sprinting across the window there, yeah. I don't know what the story is with that microphone. Right, back to that story in The Independent.
Yeah, so Eilish O'Regan and Anne-Marie Walsh have this one. So if you are a close contact of a confirmed COVID-19 case, you'll be asked to do DIY antigen testing with self-swabbing at home. We just heard it on the news there. Now, this is if the number of suspected infections continues to rise. Owen mentioned it there, if they exceed 20,000 testing a day. So it's a fear, basically, that the HSE has, that there is a rise at the moment in the incidence of infection in older age groups. That includes those over the age of 60. But it must be said, the same ratio of sickness and death as the past year will not unfold, obviously, because we have so many people vaccinated. They did confirm yesterday, the HSE, that it has a plan to put put this in place. So you won't be automatically offered the PCR test, which is analysed in a lab. Instead, you'll be giving a packet of 5 antigen tests to take home and instructions on how to use them. You'll test yourself over the subsequent days, and if you're clear after 10 days, then you can stop restricting your movements. But if you do test positive, you'll be then asked to come forward for a PCR test, which will be analysed then in the lab.
Yeah, we were talking about it there in relation to conserving water, and the Irish Examiner is covering that story actually this morning. The public has been advised to conserve water and take care in the sun as Ireland faces into a full week of skyrocketing temperatures. National forecaster Met Aaron has warned that parts of the country could be set to breach the 30 degrees Celsius barrier, a mark of exceptionally warm weather only noted on a handful of occasions in Ireland over the past 50 years. The hottest temperature of the year was recorded on Saturday in County Galway. That was at 29.5 degrees Celsius. I think though in County Down on Saturday or Sunday there was 31 degrees. However, while this week's levels are likely to be a deal less extreme than those seen across the weekend, the 30 degrees Celsius mark could be breached in a few locations, according to Met Aaron. The next 3 to 4 days are set to see temperatures in the high 20s across the country, with consistent sunshine and the possibility of the odd thundery downpour. And as I said there, Irish Water are urging you to conserve water in County Kildare and also further across the country as well. Ciara, in the Independent again, publicans set to lose battle over checking passes at bar instead of the door. Now, aren't the restaurants and the pubs maybe meeting government today?
Yeah, there's a series of meetings. So Philip Ryan has this one. So representatives of the pub trade, they made the case to check the certificates at the bar rather than the door. This is during a series of these meetings. But it's been decided that the pubs, restaurants and cafes will have to check the passes at the doors to see if the customers have been fully vaccinated or recovered from COVID-19 in the past 6 months, it says here. Business owners, they're expecting an app to be introduced to allow them to check the validity of the EU digital COVID certificates. Hospitality groups have yet to receive clarity about this app. It's expected customers will have to show personal ID along with the cert to prove it's their own document. The government's working group on indoor dining, it's meeting with representatives today of the industry for the last round of, or the latest round of talks, I should say. And despite the rising number of cases linked to the Delta variant, plans to allow indoor dining to resume next Monday, that would be the 26th of July, are still being advanced.
Yeah, there's just one story kind of in relation to that in the Irish Times. Warnings that non-COVID care may face severe pressure from that Delta variant that you mentioned there, Ciara. A large fourth wave driven by the Delta variant could pose significant challenges to non-COVID care before the end of August, with warnings that heavy caseloads would put severe pressure on the HSE. Hospitalisations, as we know, associated with COVID-19 remain low relative to the pandemic highs recorded in January and also last year. The HSE said on Monday it was examining modelling and projections, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. Back in the Examiner, MLAs return to Stormont to oppose plan which would end the trouble prosecutions. Northern Ireland's politicians returning to Stormont later after their summer break. They are going to send a message to the UK government that they will not accept plans to end prosecutions for troubles crimes. The Assembly has been recalled from its summer recess as anger grows over proposals revealed last week by Secretary of State Brandon Lewis to deal with legacy issues in Northern Ireland. Meanwhile, victims of terrorism are also expected to travel to Downing Street to hand over a letter indicating their opposition to what has been described as a de facto amnesty. So that's taking place today at some of those meetings, and I'm sure as well it'll carry on over the course of the week. Ciara, if we look at the Journal Online, then a very, very tragic story making some of the headlines this morning. A 13-year-old boy dies after entering the water in County Down.
Yeah, this incident, well, police were alerted of the incident at about 3:30 yesterday. It was at the Canal Court area of Scarva. They attended the scene along, obviously, with other emergency services. The boy was taken to hospital. He was pronounced dead there. It's not being treated as suspicious, the death. Head of the Northern Irish Police Force, Gary Magwood, did tell BBC yesterday that crews attended the traumatic scene. It's very traumatic for crews and those in the local area. And of course, our condolences go out to the family. And yeah, look, it's always horrible hearing about that stuff to do with water in this time of year. But Owen, I know you did have John Leach on of the Irish Water Safety last week. So again, as you called for it, but just take care, obviously, around open water.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, obviously if you can swim in lifeguarded areas where there's one of those life buoys in the area as well, and always swim in groups if possible. But, you know, John Leach was on the programme last week with some good advice, and you can get more advice on watersafety.ie. That's the name of that website. Ciara, we're going to stick with you though, and back in the Independent. Move to stop insurance firms punishing loyalty with constant price hikes. What does that tell us?
Well, hopefully it tells us we'll save some money, Owen. So Charlie Weston has this. So insurance customers who don't shop around, we're told all the time to shop around, which I think a lot of younger people are quite lazy at this. I know Clem is a big guy for shopping around. Not that he's not young, but you know what I'm saying. He loves the old shop around for the insurance and all the rest. But if you don't shop around, you're going to be protected from having your premiums hiked every year. The central bank will disappoint some people because it's going to stop short of calling for an outright ban on all forms of discriminatory dual pricing, and that's where insurance companies impose a loyalty penalty on customers who stay with the same provider, which makes zero sense. A whole business's like idea, I guess, is to have loyalty, isn't it? And to give people discounts, etc. But this is going to involve discounts to new customers in a bid to build market share. It will recommend that the government legislates to bring in rules that forces insurers to move over a 6-month period to stop what is called the price walking aspect of dual pricing, where insurers increase the premiums each year for existing customers. Mainly relates to older customers' own, and the legislation will be needed if the government agrees to the central bank recommendation.
There's a story in the Irish Times in the sports section this morning, and the headline is Everton suspend first team player pending police investigation. And it goes on to say, Everton have suspended an unnamed first-team player pending a police investigation, the Premier League club said on Tuesday, without providing any further details about the case. So this is a story just breaking this morning. The statement says, the club will continue to support the authorities with their inquiries and will not be making any further statement at this time, Everton added in a statement on its website. Everton, who appointed former Liverpool manager Rafa Benitez as their new manager last month, are preparing for the new season after finishing 10th in the previous campaign, and they take on the mighty Southampton on August 14th at Goodison Park. So, strange story, but I'm sure more details will emerge from that over the coming days.
I saw that last night on some of the British papers online, and it seems as if people are naming individuals on Twitter, etc. So,
that could possibly just be hearsay in terms of who's been named, but according to the statement that Everton give, they haven't named him, and the Irish Times here reporting as well, so we'll wait and see what happens there. Ciara, I'm not sure if you saw the BBC Panorama documentary last night on obviously BBC. It was on at 8:30. People can check it out, I'm sure, after. But the headline in The Independent, and we're going to be talking about this to Leo Powell of the Irish Field just after 10 o'clock. Horse racing industry calls urgent meeting after allegations in BBC Panorama slaughterhouse investigation. So horse racing chiefs will hold urgent meetings with animal welfare authorities and other industry leaders to discuss the content of that investigation, which found more than 4,000 former racehorses were slaughtered at abattoirs and they were Irish trained. It's also alleged injured horses were transported over long distances from Ireland to the UK for slaughter against animal welfare guidelines, and that contaminated horse meat made its way into the human food chain after animals microchips were fraudulently swapped. So I saw commentary on social media last night as well, people expressing their shock, surprise, anger, whatever you want to call it, and we'll be talking more about that after 10 o'clock, like I said, with Leo Powell of the Irish Field. In the Journal once again, Ciara, Defence Forces deployed ethical hackers to fight back against a massive HSE cyber attack.
Yeah, so this happened in May, and it actually happened the day I got my first vaccine on, so it was very interesting going to the vaccination centre after this had happened. So they're trained, right? these ethical hackers to think like a cyber criminal and highlight flaws in the system's structure, which makes sense when you think about it. But there's an officer with the Defence Force Communications and Information Services Corps. He's revealed to the Journal here that for the first time, the detailed work of the unit during the HSE crisis, which is still not yet fully resolved, it was in a podcast, he said that the unit was contacted immediately by the HSE, and they then began trying to find out who the hackers were and what they were analysing, and to analyse the virus itself. He said, we had personnel who were analysing the malware, what does it do? They were also hunting for the threat actor, the adversary on the network, etc, etc. It's quite interesting when you read about it. But lately, Owen, there's a friend of mine, a lot of people have been talking about, you know, getting the scam calls and stuff. There's a friend of mine who keeps receiving voicemails, and in the background you can hear, his name is, let's say Rory, whatever his name is blah, blah, blah. And then the person who's hacking him is like, hello, Rory, hello, Rory. And he's literally receiving about six of these voicemails a day, and he's freaking out about it. But yeah, just don't call the numbers back. I think he called the number back and he got caught out. Ignore any of these numbers and try get yourself an ethical hacker, I guess.
I don't know what it is, but I think I have quite a lot of fans in Tunisia and Algeria, because over the last couple of days I've had countless phone calls from Tunisia and Algeria, because it comes up on your phone what country it's from. But what I find interesting in some of these scams is that they're managing to use like an 045 number or an 01 number or an 046 number or whatever number is in your local area here in Kildare or the surrounding areas, you know.
And that's what I was just about to say to you there, is that, my friend, the number is coming up is not an Irish number whatsoever, but it comes up, as you were mentioning, the geographical location would say Tunisia, Algeria, of the numbers you're getting. But my friend, even though this number is not Irish, it comes up geographically as Ireland. So just be careful, people. Don't get caught out. Just don't answer the phone. Just don't do it.
But I found it as well, even, say, in here when we're trying to get through to people or whatever, that a lot of people are not even answering the phone. So, you know,
I think that's just you. People answer me, Owen. People answer me.
Yeah, nobody's picking up the phone for me. Maybe that says a lot about myself rather than nothing else. But yeah, look, the advice obviously is, if you don't recognise the number, don't answer it. Never ring it back. Don't give out the details, personal details, PPS number, bank card, anything like that.
But answer to us when we're trying to book you for the show.
Exactly, yeah. or just want to have a chat, make sure you answer to us. That's the only exception to the rule. Right, back in the Irish Examiner then, and we might cover this either on Kildare Focus this afternoon or tomorrow morning. We'll get Dara O'Loughlin on, because pharmacies are calling for more Pfizer doses as young people are, in quotes, clamouring for a vaccine. It comes as pharmacists today administer their 100,000th vaccine, with 86% of these going to the 18 to 34 year olds. Dara O'Loughlin is from the Irish Pharmacy Union. He says the majority of jabs administered there have been single shot doses, which is the Janssen vaccine, isn't it? Over 800 pharmacies around the country are administering that vaccine, while the HSE provided Pfizer vaccine to just 350 pharmacies. Those with the Pfizer vaccine are largely located in communities that are far from a vaccination centre. Mr. O'Loughlin saying, we would love to see more pharmacies having access to the Pfizer vaccine, particularly because there's a dip in the supply of the Janssen vaccines. And of course, you can get all the local pharmacies here in Kildare that are giving out those vaccines on our website at kfmradio.com. One final story from you then this morning, Ciara, and it's in relation to the Olympics. Now, we've seen a couple of positive COVID-19 cases over at the Olympics in Tokyo. I think there was a Czech Republic volleyball player and a couple of South Africans as well testing positive.
Coco Gauff, the infamous teen sensation of tennis.
Did she
pulled
test
out.
Positive?
Yeah, she tested positive. I think it was either Monday morning or Sunday night. So she's out, unfortunately. She would have been a big hopeful for a medal for the US.
Right. And the Journal then is going with, who's carrying the Irish flag? Kelly Harrington and who?
Brendan Irvine. They're going to be the flag bearers of the opening ceremony for the Olympics 2020. As we know, Tokyo are still a bit, you know, on edge. A lot of the public about letting people come in and letting these games begin. Cases obviously are rising, increasing in the country. But it kind of feels like with the Lions this year, these sporting events are kind of forgotten about. I guess it's because of COVID, isn't it? Like, you know, you think of the Olympics back in 2012, you know, Rio in 2016. Obviously in 2012, it was our neighbours, obviously across the water. But it's just not the same hype.
Yeah, but like, I can completely see where the people of Tokyo are coming from
here.
Yeah,
it's worrying.
Like, could you imagine if Dublin was hosting the Olympics and we had all these countries coming in? There would be uproar in Ireland, and some would say rightly so.
And also you think of the Asian countries over, you know, the past decades. They've dealt with a lot more epidemics, not pandemics, than we have. So they've had a lot more, experience with viruses. And they're very law-abiding in terms of, you know, wearing the face masks and, you know, not gathering and, you know, they're a different culture to us. They definitely do what they're told more so than Irish or maybe some of the Western world would. But yeah, look, listen, Kelly Harrington is a big hopeful for a medal for Ireland. So let's hope we get a gold.
When do the Olympics start? Is it the opening ceremony is Thursday night, Friday morning?
I think they begin on Friday then.
Right.
Would lead me to believe. But maybe some begin on Thursday in Tokyo. But anyway, Thursday or Friday. Watch the Olympics.
Looking forward to
show what you could have been on.
I think because of the way the time difference is as well, that the majority of stuff is going to be happening in the evening and the night time for us here in Ireland, which will be the daytime over in Japan. What are you laughing at?
Thank you for explaining that to us. We understand.
Yeah, you're welcome. If anybody wants to watch it, you have to watch it in the night time. There we go. Right, after the break, we will be talking to Dr. Charlotte McIver, the Active Consent Programme co-lead with NUI Galway, that new sexual consent online support hub available for third level students and staff when the new academic year begins in the autumn. It's all to come. All right, welcome back to the programme. Keep your messages coming in to us, 0833 97 97 97 on the text and the WhatsApp. You can also email studio@kfmradio.com or you can call us on 045 901 490. Now, as I mentioned before the break, a new online learning hub on sexual consent for third level is to launch in the new academic year. It will contain material for students and staff in higher level institutions. And joining me on the line to discuss this and indeed is Active Consent Programme co-lead and head of psychology at NUI Galway, Dr. Pádraig McNeela. Dr. McNeela, good morning to you and welcome to the programme. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Just to say you gave me a little promotion there. I'm a senior lecturer in psychology at NUIG.
Oh, very good. Okay. Listen, talk to me about this new online sexual consent support hub then. It was launched... Was it yesterday the announcement came, but students and staff will really see the benefits of it in the new academic year?
Yeah, you know, like we've learned an awful lot through the COVID experience there last year. Everything went online. So we would have been doing like face-to-face consent workshops and so forth prior to that. We had to design like an online workshop and various kind of online resources and videos and so forth. So we decided then the next step really is to kind of consolidate that and bring it together into one website. And we've been working in colleges for a number of years. And again, the natural next step is to take that learning and make it available, not just to college students and staff who want to receive training, but to anybody really. So we have in mind like groups of parents or teachers or anybody in society, because as you know, like the whole topic of consent has become a really live issue. People know how important it is, but still, like we do find, people don't quite have an accurate understanding of it.
It's something that has been called for quite a while now, and you know, people want to see it brought in from younger ages, and I think this is a great stepping stone for institutions, third level institutions, to have these support programmes. So what exactly is going to be in this programme for students and staff and also parents, like you mentioned?
Well, just later now this summer as well, we're going to, as I say, we've been very experienced in delivering online and in-person consent workshops in colleges. And later this summer, we're going to launch a version of that for schools as well. And it also kind of connected to the schools workshop, a sexual media literacy resource as well, you know, because very closely aligned to this, you've got the whole issue of pornography, sexting, and all those manner of issues that young people themselves may sometimes have queries about, but we know in particular parents do. So some of the latest research we're doing at the moment shows that parents really do want to be able to talk to their teenagers about these things, but kind of lack the confidence, lack the skills, maybe the language. So that's going to be part of the hub as well, is to reach out to parents and teenagers as well.
Is there still a stigma around the issue, not so much of consent, but just like you mentioned, pornography, talking about sex, talking about sexual relationships, and all those things that go with it? And I know, you know, the majority of those who will be in third level institutions will be, you know, from the 18 to whatever 30 cohort. Obviously, you'll have some mature students as well. But is there still that stigma, do you think, among students to talk about it and normalise that conversation?
Yeah, so definitely, like the research that we have done finds, for example, maybe half or less than half of students say that they've heard topics like consent being discussed among their peers, you know, so that obviously is good on one hand, but then on the other hand, the other half of students aren't reporting that. Again, a really positive resource is in the Active Consent Programme. We work from a very positive base to say that, like, we presume and we trust that young people want to have respectful and positive relationships with one another, and we find good evidence for that. Like 80% plus will definitely support the idea of, you know, positive assertive consent. But we do also find maybe 30% of students find it awkward, or they think it's a real barrier to kind of talking about these things. And another number as well might be more like maybe 20-25% of students who we find who actually are the neutral or they endorse rape myths. You know, the idea that somebody who is sexually assaulted has done something to kind of contribute to this. So our basic message is to kind of support the positives, to encourage people over the barriers of, like, awkwardness, if you like, but also to challenge some of the beliefs that underpin quite high levels of sexual violence and harassment that we've been able to show in the research as well. We've done a really thorough job in the colleges. The Department of Higher Education, all the colleges are really on board now. Each college has an action plan for very specific things that they're going to do in this area. But as good as our progress is, it's not enough, because there's all those lessons we've learned, but that should be applied to, you know, all settings, sports, schools, any number of different kind of community settings as well.
And Dr. McNeila, this online learning hub then, it was, as you mentioned, developed by the Department of Justice, the Department of Further and Higher Education, in partner with NUI Galway. But is it going to be available for all third level students in all institutions right around the country?
Well, absolutely. And one of the commitments is that all colleges will run their own kind of consent program. So in other words, they'll put programming into, like, orientation programs and stuff like that. But that definitely needs to be topped up, and, you know, we do an awful lot of staff training as well, and it can be difficult for all staff to access that training. So a lot of those resources will be available online. Young people as well, teenagers, will see prompts on their social media that will encourage them to get to the hub as well, and they can watch short videos. We use a lot of kind of storytelling and drama-based strategies. We know if we can connect with young people, certainly 80-90% of them will say the material that they've engaged with from us is good, it's acceptable, they learn from it, and they'd recommend it to a friend.
Well, Dr. Pádraig McNeila, Senior Lecturer at the Department of Psychology at NUI Galway and Active Consent Programme Co-Lead at the college as well. Many thanks for joining us on the programme this morning, Dr. McNeila, and good morning to you. And, of course, more information will come out in relation to that online support hub, and students, staff and parents in third level institutions will have access to it when the new academic year begins. I think it's a great initiative, and hopefully it all works out according to plan. Now, just a couple of other issues that I want to touch on, because yesterday afternoon we were contacted by a couple of listeners in relation to the standard of drinking water in Naas and the larger Naas area as to whether or not the water was safe to drink. And we got in touch with Irish Water and asked them for a statement, to ask them to investigate the situation and clarify whether or not the water in the greater Naas area was drinkable. And we received a statement back from them yesterday evening, and this is what it says. Irish Water, working in partnership with Kildare County Council, would like to reassure customers in Naas and the surrounding areas that the drinking water is safe to drink and there have been no reported issues at the treatment plants that supply the area. The drinking water produced at these plants is fully compliant with statutory drinking water regulations. Irish Water carries out regular testing and monitoring of all public water supplies in Ireland in accordance with this legislation. If customers have concerns about their water quality or experience supply issues, they should contact the Irish Water Customer Care Helpline, which is open 24/7 on 1800 278 278. Or you can also get them on Twitter at IWCare so that they can investigate. So just to reiterate, Irish Water reassuring customers in Naas that the drinking water is safe to drink, but if you have any concerns about the water quality, you can contact them on 1800 278 278. All right, moving on to issues brought up at the recent Selbridge-Leixlip Municipal District meeting by my next guest, Independent Councillor on that MD, Ida Cusson. Ida, good morning to you. Welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Owen. Thank you.
So just to take a look then at the first motion that you brought forward, you were asking the council to provide dishing at the footpaths at the interchange entrance to Castle Town House. Just tell us what dishing means if you're to dish the footpath.
It's making the, obviously, the dip down, the dishing, to dish the footpath down in order that buggies, wheelchair users, that everyone has equal access when they want to enter or exit place. So I have been asking KCC to dish the pavements, obviously, on both sides of the gate and then on the opposite side as well. And it is up at the interchange. We are talking about Castle Town House here, which is always within the top five, because Ireland, Salcha Ireland's top five visitor attractions that are free to enter attractions. And we do have a number of accessibility issues, as you heard, with the Kissing Gate as well. And just to say, we are working, a lot of us, in contact with the OPW and KCC to try and address those. So these are the outside place issues, but inside you'll know there's a map as you enter a Castle Town House in the grounds at both of the entrances. It doesn't mention anything about accessibility, the loos, the parking, nothing is marked up on it. So we are trying to address a number of issues, working with the OPW, hopefully, on those things.
Okay, you had two questions then in relation to the Loughlinstown Road junction with the Dublin Road. So first of all, you wanted the council to confirm if an assessment has been carried out for vehicular movements there, but also you want to know when a footpath will be provided from the nursing home to the Dublin Road junction.
Yeah, they're both questions and you're just trying to elicit further bits of information. I have been talking with the area engineer, and it's a bit of a teasing out of how to do these things is what I'm going at with the questions, because I would be confident that we will see a footpath progress in the short term, hopefully mid-22, because it has been on the agenda for a long time. It's always said to us the Ballyulster Key Development Area will come on stream and you'll have some things that will deliver connectivity as part of that, but it hasn't been happening, certainly not quick enough, and won't. The junction is very busy. There are often accidents at the junction because of the hedgerows are with poor sight lines. We get them caught, but they do grow back. It's a bit of a rat run to the train station. You have Elm Hall Nursing Home, and it is a nursing home in retirement village. So people leave there. They might want to go to the Orchard Garden Centre, for example, because that would be your nearest place there for a coffee and a bit of shopping and meeting with your friends and that as well. So we do need to work on it faster than we are doing. And I think in the conversations I'm having that we will see that happen.
Okay, and then finally, this morning, Ida, at the meeting, you had a motion that the council be given an opportunity to review and amend the existing grass cutting schedule for the Selbridge-Leixlip Municipal District.
Yeah, it can be a little bit of a thorny subject when you ask these kind of questions or put in a motion like that, because I had looked at the list of what grass cuttings Kildare County Council do in our private housing estate areas. So they give you the list of everywhere that they cut. That's their grass cutting schedule for the year. When you look at that, there's all the normal verges on, say, the Clane Road, the Shackleton Road. They're public verges. And then, unfortunately, interestingly, there are a number of private housing estates on the list as well. So one has to ask, as a homeowner, we pay local property tax. We also, for the most part, pay a voluntary contribution to our residents' association, and we pay our taxes. So some of us say then, well, why are we paying three different things and hoping we get our grass cut? And then you look across the way and you see perhaps some estates do manage to get a better deal than others. So your grass cutting would cost thousands per annum for every residents' association. We get, all residents' associations get a very small sub from KCC based on your kind of acreages and the number of houses. Some of the estates own would have enough to keep cattle on, and some have a small bit. So, you know, and it doesn't always proportionately work out. And despite this, KCC are in fact landlords for many, many houses in the private estates as well. But they do seem to get away with this small sub that is very little to the residents' associations, while it's appreciated. All that has to change. I have a motion at the full council asking that we review the payments to residents' association to incorporate KCC as a landlord as well. And in asking for this list of grass cutting areas, I asked why we have them on, how are they on it? And the answer is a kind of legacy. Done because some estates had no residents' associations. The grass got unruly, it was untidy, so people asked, could it be done, obviously. And I said, so then if every estate doesn't cut their grass, does that mean KCC will come in and do it? Maybe we're all a bit clueless to pay our voluntary subs if that's how it works. So obviously that's not how it works. So there is this inequity, has to be addressed, and I think we will move to that. The response to my motion anyway at the end of the day was that there was support from my fellow councillors. We're going to meet with the Parks Department in an offline meeting and have an open and transparent and fair mechanism for doing this. We'll tease it out. It can't continue the way it is. It's unfair and inequitable.
All right, great stuff. And I'm sure you'll keep us right up to date on that as well. That is independent councillor on the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District, Ida Cusson. Thanks indeed for that, Ida, and good morning to you. Now, just before we go to our next topic, I want to play a piece of audio for you from Dr. Mike Ryan from the World Health Organization that I saw on Twitter over the last couple of days. And the caption underneath it is, it's not just COVID-19 that is killing people, it's underprivilege, lack of access, it's years of living with health conditions that haven't been properly managed because of the colour of your skin, your ethnicity or your social group. And indeed, that is a quote from Mike Ryan from this next piece of audio that I'm going to play for you. Just have a listen to it, because it really does bring it home that, of course, the situation here in Ireland with COVID-19 is difficult, but over in those third world countries in particular, it is quite bad as well, even worse.
This is what's killing people, not just the virus. It's underprivilege. It's lack of access. It's years and years living with health conditions that haven't been properly managed. Because of the colour of your skin, or because of your ethnicity, or because of your social group. I know men and women who deny themselves health care so they can save money for their children if they get sick. And they know if they spend that money on themselves, they will impoverish the family. This is still a deeply unfair, deeply inequitable world, in which access to the basic human right of health is something that is given by privilege and by how much money you have. We want to change that. We can't change it overnight. We're not knights in shining armor. But behind and underneath this pandemic, COVID-19 has caused devastation, but it's equally uncovered, ripped away the bandages from a really old wound that this society has. And that is our failure to deliver equitable healthcare, a failure to recognize health as a fundamental human right. And the fact that we leave people in difficult health circumstances, sometimes decades, forgotten in the communities in which they live in, refusing to deliver them basic health care. We need to build a more secure, safe environment for our kids and everyone else to live within. Health security is not an abstract concept. Health security is about fairness, it's about equity, and older people are paying an awful price in disease, in loneliness, in isolation, and so many other things. But there are others suffering in the same way.
Yeah, he's a great speaker, Dr. Mike Ryan from the World Health Organization. And when I saw that piece of audio and I heard it, I thought it really did strike a chord, and it hits home and brings it all home just in relation to the issues going on in third world countries, and brings it all into perspective. Let us know what you think. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97. And you can also email us studio@kfmradio.com. Let's go to Studio 2 and Kieran. No. trouble.
Yeah, Owen, calls have been made to establish a dedicated committee to overhaul family leave. This is part of a national debate on supports available to parents. So parental leave entitles parents to take unpaid leave from work to spend time looking after their children. A person can take up to 26 weeks parental leave for each eligible child before their 12th birthday. To join us, we have Senator Fiona O'Loughlin, Fianna Fáil Senator. Good morning, Fiona.
Good morning to you, Ciara.
Fiona, what is the Seanad looking to change here?
Okay, well, just before I speak about that, just to go back to what Dr. Mike Ryan said, and thanks indeed to Owen for sharing that, and it just reminds us that we can all be in the same storm, but we don't all have the same shelter, and we absolutely need to do what we can to support those that haven't. And UNICEF are running a really good campaign, Have a Vaccine, Give a Vaccine. And I think it's a really important campaign. We're very lucky to be living in a country where we can access the vaccine very quickly at no cost to ourselves. But we really should be paying it back to those that don't. But just in relation to this specific area, myself and Lisa have been working on a number of different issues around childcare, around parental leave. And I think COVID has brought, like it has done with so many other areas, brought very much to the fore. We've seen that maybe for the first time, a lot of other partners and dads have had the opportunity to spend more time with children as they're small. And they've liked it. They've really appreciated the opportunity to spend that time at home, and we want to look and explore other ways that we can do that. And that goes hand in hand with childcare costs. And in Ireland at the moment, we spend 0.39% of the GDP in childcare. It's double that in Europe, and it's treble that in Scandinavian countries. So definitely, we need to have a debate in relation to both the type of leave that parents can have and indeed the type of childcare. And one actually goes hand in hand with the other.
Fiona, if you take the basics, obviously parental leave, maternity leave is something that is heard of so much. But as you rightly mentioned, fathers of children are availing, I think, of parental leave more than ever during COVID-19. And is this something that the Seanad also wants to look at in terms of the amount of time a mother gets off compared to the father of a child?
Absolutely. It would be wonderful to have extended maternity and paternity leave for all, but obviously, you know, that depends on the employer, depends on the employment situation. It's not going to suit people who are self-employed, etc. Myself and Lisa drafted a bill when we were both in the Dáil. We're redrafting it now. We've had the benefit, I suppose, of the COVID experience. We've had the benefit of speaking to other organisations who had slightly different views, such as the National Women's Council. So basically what our new bill is saying is that at the moment, mums are entitled to 26 weeks state-supported leave after the birth of a child. But if they go back to work early, the payment stops. So we want to look at the possibility of that period of time being shared with the other partner, because it just may suit employment-wise. The other partner could take that back up. Now, initially, we had that the mum would take a specific amount of time. Now, we've brought that up to 12 weeks because we want to acknowledge and recognise that the first few months for a woman after giving birth, and indeed for breastfeeding purposes, is particularly unique and important. But then there is another 14 weeks that could very easily be shared. I also want to look at the area that where at the moment, if a mum goes back into work, so say, for example, a woman who's either self-employed or indeed is working as maybe a lawyer or a barrister or in a particular position that they absolutely have to go back into work. They can't go back into work part-time. So we feel that the system should be more flexible, and we should have a situation where a mum could go back into work part-time, maybe 2 days a week, and get the payment for the other 3 days a week for a period of time. So it'd be reduced payment, but it would allow that bit of flexibility about going back into the work situation. And of course, this would obviously apply to adoptive parents, and there would have to be adequate notice to employers, etc.
Fiona, have you been in contact with your own constituents in regards to this? Because obviously we know it's great when politicians can draft these things, but it's also great to hear from the public in terms of bills and things that will be brought into law and how the future of Ireland will work. As we know, we live in modern Ireland now.
You're right, and that's a very fair point. I did when we were drafting the first bill, but now, as I say, we're redrafting. We're nearly at the point of having it ready. And you're right, I do need to consult with my constituents and get their views. So let this be the first conversation as part of that. And then through other social media methods, I will certainly reach out and ask people what they think. I'm also working on another bill with Senator Catherine Arda in relation to the provision of IVF. As you know, there's no state provision of IVF in this country, and it's IVF comes at a huge cost. The average is about 10,000 euros per cycle, which is very, very, very difficult for so many women and so many couples. And there's no guarantee, obviously, of a baby after that. So that's something that we're looking on, that the state would intervene and provide funding based on specific and certain criteria.
Well, Fiona Loughlin, thank you for joining me this morning. And if any of our listeners out there would like to get their views heard and obviously get in touch with us this morning, they can do so on texting or WhatsApping 0833 97 97 97. We're also on the line 045 901 490. And if you need a bit more information in regards to what you're entitled to when it comes to parental leave, do log online to citizensinformation.ie. That is Senator Fiona Loughlin of Kildare South. Thank you so much.
All right, lots coming up in the next hour of the programme, including just after 10 o'clock, we will be speaking to Leo Powell, the editor of the Irish Field, after that BBC Panorama investigation alleges that thousands of ex-race horses were being sent to abattoirs, many of which were previously trained in Ireland. Milltown GAA Club granted planning permission for a new development at the club. Kildare Tidy Towns urging people to get involved in their local communities ahead of the annual competition. We mark the anniversary of the first moon landing on this day, 1969, and we've motions and issues from the Selbridge Leixlip and Thigh Municipal District meeting. But the time now just coming up to 10 o'clock. Let's go to the newsroom and the headlines with Ciara Plunkett.